good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cotton Cuff, Henny Cutter gave me.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. That means distant thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot, and we discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So we want to wish somebody a happy birthday. So here we go. Happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy it's Ogama's birthday today.
Birthday. Singing around with her. Happy birthday. Okay. Wow.
Awesome. Yeah, we wanted good. To.
We had Stevie Ogama. Wonder record that and send that to us.
Yeah. Personally, awesome. For Ogama.
He didn't get a chance to hear that. But yeah, wow. Mm-hmm. Another time around the sun, Ogama.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for the birthday wishes. It is another time around the sun, but the older you get, kind of the less birthdays matter. But I am going to be celebrating with my family tomorrow, so I'm pretty excited for that.
Well, I wouldn't say birthdays matter the older you get. I think I really like my birthday, right,
I think
Wendy?
They should matter more.
Yeah,
right? The more exactly. important, they seem that they come faster as you get older, though.
Well, now that we acknowledged Ogama's birthday, and now we can just move on. No, I'm just kidding. but yeah, really happy birthday. Birthday and Pini Gigi for all you do here. And you know, one of the things too, before we gush more on each segment and remind everyone it's your birthday and that your what your Venmo is I want to really say Pini Gigi to Lewis. Lewis is our new partner in Native Roots Radio. And Lewis, do you mind playing your TikTok that you put up today?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Let's get it going.
Hey, Cudahy to all my TikTok friends and relatives all over Turtle Island. Local and national guests help us get current on Mother Earth, tribal, and political issues all across Turtle Island. On today's show, Minnesota State Senator Mary Kunish, along with regulars Wendy, Ogama, and Lewis. Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central Time, we are awake. Wow, Wendy.
Nice.
We're on TikTok now.
Yeah, that's awesome. TikTok is TikTok. I always say that. TikTok is the bomb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so what's our TikTok, Lewis?
Native Roots Radio.
Hey, that's TikTok, easy to remember.
Yep, Native Roots Radio. We're in the money on that one.
Okay. There we go.
Right on. So nobody could see it, but it was great graphics and great editing by Lewis. So yeah. Hey, we can bleed over a little bit to next segment too, Ogama, because we were so excited with your birthday and so excited that we're TikTok famous now. We got two or three people following us. And so Ogama, with the news, where you don't hear any news like this anywhere else, Pini Gigi.
Hey, Anim Buju, everybody. I just want to start off by saying that right now in San Francisco, California, in solidarity with the frontline indigenous leadership in Minnesota, there are about 24 activists that are occupying the San Francisco Federal Building demanding that the President Joe Biden stop Line 3. So I am pretty excited about that. And they are part of, I believe that update came from the Oil and Gas Action Network. I'm not sure if that is specifically the group that's holding solidarity, but I wanted to reach out and say, you know, thank you to our relatives in California and to our allies who are holding that space. We need all the help we can get. Unfortunately, the drought in Minnesota actually is kind of helping us. The drought is actually having an impact on Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline construction here in Minnesota. The Minnesota DNR did suspend some of the water permits that were given to Enbridge for dust control, drilling, and line testing in some locations where surface water is in low supply. The project will not stop. Enbridge just isn't able to take surface water. They are still allowed to take groundwater in some areas. Basically, what's going to happen is the DNR is going to continue to monitor water levels and will allow water use to resume once supplies. I mean, they're calling these supplies, but like this is water. This is a limited resource. These are not supplies that we can make more of. But once the supplies are back to more sustainable levels. So for now, the major watersheds that are most affected or that are experiencing a stop because of Enbridge's watering permits being canceled are on the Pine River, the Crowing River, the Mississippi River near Grand Rapids, and the St. Louis River watershed areas. So there's just four places, four watersheds where they're experiencing these changes, but it looks like it's installation 16, 17, 20, 25, 27, 21, 36, and 37. So that includes the Shell River, Savannah River, Lewis River, Pine River, and Daggett Brook, which is outside of Pine River. So I'm grateful for a slow to this construction, but again, Enbridge is still being allowed to pull groundwater from this for these permits. I also want to make sure that everybody knows that the RISE Coalition put out a statement calling everyone to northern Minnesota. They're asking people to come to protect the wild rice waters July 19th through 31st. Right now, Enbridge is more than 60% done constructing their pipeline. And on July 15th, the last restrictions keeping them from drilling under the waterways where the wild rice grows will lift. So Enbridge is preparing to go under the final river crossings, likely starting with the one under the headwaters of the Mississippi. You are invited to come hold space, stand in solidarity, and honor the treaty obligations we all share. They're asking that people come to the LaSalle campground and be ready to go where needed. The LaSalle campground is near where the Treaty People Gathering was. So if you made it to the Treaty People Gathering or if you got some info from the Treaty People Gathering on hand still, that is where you go. Again, asking you to come to northern Minnesota July 19th through 31st to help honor treaty rights, stand in solidarity, and hold space. That is something that needs to happen, and thank you to RISE Coalition for putting that out. I also just want to send some prayers up for our relatives at the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation. They are in the state of Washington, and they are in a state of disaster right now. They are dealing with a rather large fire that was sparked on Monday, they believe by lightning, the Chewea Creek Fire. The first reports came in the evening on Monday, and by today it was burning at about 32 square acres. So we're facing a really serious climate crisis right now, and of course these types of things like fires and droughts and all those things are always, as we know, disproportionately affecting our native relatives. So even though we have this fight here in Minnesota, I wanted to send some prayers out. There's about 9,500 descendants of 12 tribes that are enrolled in the Confederated Tribes of Colville, so they're a really large group right now, and you know, they're frantically trying to set up camp to protect their people from fire, which you know, granted, could be all of us here in Minnesota at any given time with the drought we're facing too. So whatever we get back tenfold. I know Robert always says that, so I'm giving prayers for them. Today on my birthday, I want if anybody can, please send some prayers for all the animals and for the people that are experiencing what's happening with these fires. Right now, there's over 70 active wildfires in the western part of the country. California, Oregon, and Washington are all really hard hit right now. So say some prayers for them and also for Ontario and Canada, because they're also experiencing fires as well.
Yeah, it's really sad, Wendy.
It is sad, you know, and if anybody, you know, is living near the drought and having really hot temperatures, please put pans of water out for the wildlife.
Yeah, good call. And yeah. Ogama, are you done with the news, or should we jump in a little more the next segment?
Yeah, I've got just one more thing on line five and another thing from our relatives in South America, so perfect. I can do another minute or two.
Well, up next, the birthday girl and State Senator Mary Kunish. This is Friday edition of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Hey. Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake and I'm your host, Robert.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, before we get going here with State Senator Mary Kunish, that's with all Ogama's birthday singings and celebrations.
Yeah,
we cut into her news, so we'll give you a couple more minutes here before we get to State Senator Mary Kunish.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. So just a couple more things here. Our relatives trying to stop the Line 5 pipeline are having an event on Saturday, July 24th. It's going to be an all-day event, and they're asking people to come to the Copper Falls State Park near Mellon, Wisconsin. What they're going to do, I think, they're hoping to release something into the river that would time a potential oil leak on the Enbridge Line 5 easement. So I don't know what they could release, but I'm certain there's probably something they could do to time it. And I think that it's important to talk about that, timing those things. In Minnesota, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency just announced that Enbridge is now going to have to put out those little orange bumpers that we've seen on July 6th at the Willow River spill. They're going to be preemptively putting those up whenever they drill now. So now we're going to have no idea when they actually have a spill. I don't know that that's an accident. And then, you know, people in North America, North American indigenous people, are not the only people that are facing facing these kinds of things here. Our relatives in Brazil, there's about 850 members of 4 dozen Brazilian indigenous tribes that are camped in Brasilia, which is, and they're just a little ways away from the Congress and government buildings. And they're there to fight for their indigenous land rights. What's happening right now is that there's a bill known as PL 490 that, if passed, weakens indigenous people's lands rights and opens the door to more extractive industries. Mm. So on Tuesday this week, police fired tear gas, stun grenades, and rubber bullets against the indigenous protesters as the Justice and Constitution Committee was expected to vote on the legislation. An earlier vote on the bill was postponed last week. So, I mean, this is not new. This is not something that is over for any of our indigenous people anywhere on Turtle Island. So I don't know if that makes anybody feel better, but at the very least, we know we're not the only ones fighting.
Yeah, Pini Gigi, and again, happy birthday, Ogama, and all you do for Native Roots Radio, and as a warrior, young warrior woman, we really appreciate you here. So, hey, we're back to a regular schedule right now, and we got State Senator Mary Kunish, who's I've been following on Facebook, who's doing all this Native stuff all over Turtle Island, and I'm sure you got a few things to tell us about what you did this week. Great, and Pini Gigi for being on. Okay, you're muted. I always like to say that once a show. Okay, and here we go. State Senator Mary Kunish, you're on.
Now, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, good. Happy to be here with you this very warm Friday afternoon.
Awesome. Hey, can you tell us a little bit of what you were doing last week? It looked pretty exciting. I saw you with Ruth Buffalo and Red Dawn Foster, all these warriors across Turtle Island. It looked like you were doing some important work and also some nice pictures.
Thanks. Yep, we were out in Rapid City, South Dakota for a legislative conference, the Midwest Legislative Conference. So the states of North and South Dakota, Kansas, Minnesota, and a couple of the provinces from Canada were there. And so we all gathered to talk about important issues. And Sean Bordeaux from South Dakota got us all together for a a Native American caucus where we were able to kind of talk about some of the things that have really been plaguing us. And it was really good to be there. You remember Ponca Way? She was there. I can't remember everybody's name. I feel bad. But we were, you know, talking about issues that really affect each one of our states. And then, of course, they're going to affect our states as we're connected to those. But one of the committees that I was assigned to as a state senator here is Canada Midwest relationships. And so Canadians still cannot come down to the United States. Wow. And the trade is still really the economic issues are still really, really bad for both Canada and Minnesota. And so there are, I believe, only two Canadians, actual Canadians from Canada came down. And then here in Minnesota, we have a council person. He was there and those sort of things. So I sat in and listened to some of the struggles to open up the borders again. It's a huge impact, not just on Minnesota and the Dakotas or any of the bordering states, but, you know, economically, it really affects a lot of people. And just, you know, personally, last August, I believe it was, I ordered a new couch. And unbeknownst to me, it was manufactured in Canada. And that couch didn't come until February because of the import-export issues because of COVID. And so those were some of the issues that we talked about. But I presented two resolutions to this Midwest Canadian group. One was to continue the work of and working together on our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, because we know that our relatives, you know, there never used to be borders. And so all these states around us and up into Canada, all the way to Alaska, this was the land of the Indigenous people. And so we have relatives now on both sides of the borders, now that we have border lines. That was an important one to do. And then the other one is to is around all the remains of the children that are being found in the boarding schools.
Right.
And so as I've been talking to people about that, and they're asking, you know, where, when, why, how, all of those sort of things, and what are we going to do to address that? One of the things that I was concerned about is if and when the remains of these children are returned home, are moved or returned home, that their remains, as well as any funerary items that might be with them, you know, maybe they were buried with a favorite toy or, you know, clothing perhaps that they had at one point. Anyway, that those were returned to the tribe as well, because historically in the past, a lot of times when remains were found, they were sent to an anthropological institute or university for study, or just, you know, put in a box and put on a shelf somewhere, just being stored until somebody wanted to look at them and measure them and do DNA on them. But I thought it was really, really important that the remains are returned to the tribes. And of course, how do we know which tribes they belong to? We're not always sure, but most of the kids in these different unique boarding schools and residential schools came from specific tribes and reservations. So otherwise, that they would be left and remain to rest where they are found. And at that point, then that area is protected and sacred lands that cannot be disturbed. Because, you know, we've heard stories about how there's a mound and people know that there are bodies buried in there, but they're used, kids bike over them, or it's a dirt bike trail, or I heard one place where the residential school is now a golf course, and people are out playing golf courses amid gravestones.
Right.
So just more consideration, more respect, and allowing the tribes to decide how they would like to to lay those children to rest.
Yeah, and it's not only tribes, it's families too. And I talked to, we all know Marlene, Minister Marlene, who's Ho-Chunk, and she's going on a trek right now, and they're returning a lot of their children to North Dakota with Rosebud. Families. And yeah, right.
Yep.
So that's happening this week,
too. I don't know how they will identify, you know, the remains other than doing DNA tests. And there, you know, again, there are folks that would say, let's not do that. In fact, let's not even disturb them with sonar or ultrasound right. equipment, because that disturbs their spirits once again. But right. I think it's important for the tribes and the families to decide how they would like to put this their children to rest.
I
and
think
so. Neither one of those resolutions passed, but in a way it was okay, because what the people on the committee said, we don't know enough about it. Mm-hmm. We want to vote for this. We know it's the right thing to do, but we want to know more about this. Like, educate us, please. So we tabled the resolutions. We're going to put together information sessions around both of those issues, and then we'll go back as a committee and hopefully educate the legislators and the Parliament people of Canada, though they probably know well enough, maybe even better than me, and then take that vote again. So it didn't pass, but in a way it turned out to be better than I had hoped.
Do you have time for another segment, State Senator?
Sure, I'll stick around.
Awesome. Great. So one of the things, too, I think these were marked graves that they're returning their bodies to, and I think that's yep. how they know who the families are. So there is a differential of what we're talking about.
Sure.
So, hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College will help you get where you want to go. Located downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, one-on-one mentorship, and a Metro Transit pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality. Connect with a counselor today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
We have vital information we would like to share with you. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on testing sites, isolation space, vaccines, housing assistance, and food resources. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19 or has questions to determine if you should get tested, please call them at 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986. That's 651-304-9986.
In Minnesota, perinatal and postpartum mothers have legal protections to help keep them safe and healthy in the workplace. That means exclusions from heavy lifting, safe spots for breastfeeding, and more. The Women's Economic Security Act protects the rights of pregnant and postpartum women to work safely during pregnancy and to express breast milk at work. The Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry is here to help you and to protect your rights. Call 800-342-5354 or visit dli.mn.gov/newparents.
Hi, Minnesota. Stephanie Miller here. Join me every weekday morning from 8 to 11 for a humorous look at politics and current events on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, free, and approved for everyone over the age of 12. Need help getting a COVID-19 vaccine? Trusted community connectors can find vaccination sites, make appointments, answer questions, and provide interpretation. To learn more about scheduling a free appointment or find a community connector, visit ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine. That's ramseycounty.us/COVID-vaccine.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Stronghearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Stronghearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for clear skies overnight with a low around 63, Saturday sunny with a high near 86, and Sunday sunny with a high near 88. It's been 756 days since the last Twin Cities Pride event, and fortunately, it's back this weekend. The 49th annual Twin Cities Pride Festival will be at Loring Park this Saturday and Sunday, and it'll feature local BIPOC and LGBTQ plus vendors, a food court, a beer garden, and music stages. Details at tcpride.org.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, before we get back to State Senator Mary Kunish, Lewis, do you have any response to what Harold had to say up there about our missing children?
Yeah, you know, there was a whole procession on Rosebud, the Sechongo Lakota Oyate, and a couple other organizations involved with our tribe. Did a convoy of bringing these six Sechongo Lakota children from Carlisle all the way back to Rosebud. And it was followed by motorcycles, you know, flags, and a lot of prayer, too. So we were able to get quite a bit of our tribal citizens out there in order to bring these children back home. And very emotional when we talk about it. Even my voice trembles when I do speak about it. So it's so touching. But you know, like, we got to prepare ourselves as an Indian community, as Indigenous people. This is just the beginning. We're going to see a lot more of this. So, again, we're so happy to see them come home.
Yeah, thank you, and Pina Gigi for that. All right, back to State Senator Mary Kunish. I know, how does it feel? I shouldn't say to be off, but you're not in session for the first time in maybe 10 years, it seems like.
Feels like that. I haven't really been off. My days are still very, very full with the legislative work. I was at a luncheon today with DFL women legislators, and we had so much to talk about, not only just this session and what we were able to do or we weren't able to do, but also looking ahead at the elections that will be coming up and redistricting, sharing a lot of resources with each other. And even though this is not an election year, we all are, you know, basically campaigning anyway. We'll be outdoor knocking, contacting our constituents, doing fundraisers and that sort of thing. But I got tapped by one of the women that was there who had been a legislator, and she's working on a project around education and asked me to join her on that one. And then I'm going to send this to you, and maybe this is backwards, but another woman handed me this flyer, and these are scholarships for solar and renewable energy. And wow. So they really are looking for uniquely women and women of color to get into that work. And there are accelerated courses, and there are flexible courses 8 and 16-week courses in a mix of online and in-person in order to become solar and renewable energy experts, which would be great. So I'll send that to you, and you can post that. Yeah, so we're always connecting and reconnecting on those.
Was that Century College that I saw, or is that all
Century College. Let's see. I think the deadline is at the end of August, so they're anxious to do it. The scholarships from the Target Corporation will range from $3,200 to $4,700 for tuition and supplies. On the other side, graduates can earn $76,710 a year on average with 5 years experience, with earnings up to $94,000. And so these are really important new careers that folks could have in an accelerated sort of way. So
that's exciting.
Like I said, always networking. Yeah.
Send that to us.
Mary, is that sponsored by XL Energy? I thought I saw on the flyer, or who is sponsoring that? Do you know?
Target Corporation.
Oh, Target. Okay.
And cool. It's at Century College.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah. Really low tuition rates, financial aid available. They want to help students avoid student loan debt. And then there's also additional scholarships available.
Wow. Hey, I got a question for you that's kind of off subject, but not really about what you do. There's a young warrior that I talked to for a couple hours that is new to the house. And, you know, how do you deal with, and I know she's had some issues with our own community kind of coming back at her, because, you know, I know you do a lot of work and I know she does a lot of work. And it's not our way to be braggadocious about what you're doing behind the scenes. And I know you do a lot of work behind the scenes and she does. So it appears to maybe a novice that, you know, you're not doing much or she's not doing much. I mean, how do you respond and keep your sanity? Because I know you were just talking about, you were in a meeting today. I only know you're really, really busy because we talk to you every week about what you're doing, but how do you, combat that and not get down on yourself, because we want to stay humble, but we also know that, you know, state senator and our other relatives are working really hard behind the scenes.
That is a hard one, but I have to remind people, we're supposed to be a part-time legislature, you know, and one thing I always, when we go to these conferences and hear about how legislatures are in the other states, there are states that do not pay their legislators a salary. It's a per diem when they are in session. We go into session every year and legislate. There are some that don't go in, they do every other year. But, and it's not that we can just turn it off. It's like when you're a teacher. Yeah, we're there through the school year, but when we're not in the building, we're always building up our skills. We're connecting with other educators. You know, it's always on our mind. We're always planning ahead. And it's the same thing with the legislature. And when I haven't had that problem, you know, I haven't had people, confront me and say I'm not doing enough work or that sort of thing. Sometimes,
or why aren't you at line three protesting?
Sometimes people feel I do too much for the, you know, my focus is Indigenous people, but then I say, oh, wait a minute. What I also did was this for in the education field, or, you know, get funding for a study for a new rapid bus line up to our area. And so if people ever say to me that I'm not doing enough or I'm not doing enough in a certain area, I try to let them know. And then there's also the fact that I'm not an expert on everything. And sometimes I have to let the experts be the one that are doing the legislation. I don't always have my finger or my thumb in what's going on. But I try to be visible and I try to be available to my constituents. And I think they recognize that.
So when you're voting on things, are you voting on your own conscience, or are you voting on what you ran on, or are you voting on what your constituents would like? Or is it a combination?
Oh, that's a really good question. I would say it's a combination. But I have to look closely at my district, my constituents, and focus on what is best for our area. Sometimes, you know, as a Democrat, my decisions don't necessarily align with our Republicans or other parties. But I always, when I vote a really controversial bill or issue, and people come back at me like, why did you vote for that? Or why didn't you vote for that? I can always tell them why I did or did not. You know, why I thought that was important that I supported something or prevented something. And I think that when I am able and have enough knowledge to defend myself, they understand that it wasn't just party line or it wasn't just what somebody else, you know, a lobbyist wanted me to do. When they're that controversial, I try to know as much as I can and make the best decision that I think is going to be best for the state of Minnesota as well as my district.
You know why I'm asking these things, don't you?
No.
Because of my new job. Because of my new job.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You're going to have to deal with that. And, you know, I have to say there's a lot I don't know about. I mean, I don't know that much about solar energy. I don't mm-hmm. know about taxes. I don't know so many of the things that we are expected to vote on. But I try to do my best to educate myself outside of the norm so that at least I have a pretty good understanding.
We had the lieutenant governor, and maybe Ogama can jump in and help us a little bit with what she gave out a statement, more than a one-sentence statement. And I don't know if it's good enough for some people or whatever, but I liked it, and I thought it was good. And have you heard about that? And Ogama, are you available to paraphrase it at all?
Yeah. I'm here, and Lieutenant Governor. Yeah, I'm echoing, and I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, so Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan wrote a longer statement, not just a two-sentence statement, on why she opposes Line 3 and her feelings about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I got you off mute. I put you on mute on StreamYard.
Ah, thank you. Was that the issue? I appreciate that. So Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's post basically said, you know, she's long expressed her opposition to Line 3. She talked about her daughter knowing that she's a water protector and that water is our first medicine, that wild rice, Monoman, is sacred. And she said, while she cannot stop Line 3, she will continue to do what is within her power to make sure that our people are seen, heard, valued, and protected. She said she's proud. She's a proud member of the White Earth Nation, and she stands with her people in opposition to Line 3. And I'm kind of in the same boat as Mary. You know, I don't actually really know that much about what Lieutenant Governor Flanagan's power is in this situation, you know, so I really feel for her.
Well, I'm just asking 30 seconds, State Senator, is that a beginning, a good start, or
the lieutenant has always expressed her dismay in Line 3 and does not support it, and so you know, people will again and again ask her to reiterate and to intercede, and as the lieutenant governor, she does have very limited powers to make any of those decisions. And at the end of the day, it's really in the governor's hands, and it's, you know, how he instructs his commissioners.
Thanks, State Senator Mary Kunish. Have a great week, and Pinigigi for answering all my questions. We'll be right back.
Stay with us. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
We have vital information we would like to share with you. The Department of Indian Works St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on testing sites, isolation space, vaccines, housing assistance, and food resources. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19 or has questions to determine if you should get tested, please call them at 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986. That's 651-304-9986.
Biju, I am Oshawashko Gijig. I'm from Red Lake Nation, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Wow. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And Wendy, you got to see that young warrior a few days ago.
Yeah, she was at our house. She's a doll. Really funny, smart, really awesome.
Wow. So what portion is this?
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Wow. Hey, it's a fantastic Friday. It's a positive Friday, and this is our sacred animal section with a Wendy Pilot. Tell us your name and how positive are you going to be today?
I'm going to be pretty positive. not extremely positive, but pretty positive.
All right.
My name is Hanaji Hihani. That means cares for them. As everyone knows, I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. His name is Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. And I always appreciate him giving me that name because it means a lot to me. I volunteer with the Humane Society of the United States, and my title is a Humane Policy Volunteer Leader, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level, so I'm happy to do that work, and it excites me when things get done. So I'm going to be talking about something that the Humane Society of the United States is working on along with other animal advocacy groups. Robert, and I've talked to you about this. It's called the Humane Pet Store Ordinance, right?
Yeah.
And I worked with a city council member, Sheila Lane, in Cloquet, and we got this ordinance passed there. So what the ordinance says is that no one in Cloquet or whatever, you know, area it is, cannot sell dogs and cats that originate from a puppy mill. So what this ordinance does will cut the pipeline from the puppy mills to the pet stores. And we want to get this ordinance done in as many cities in Minnesota as possible. Mm-hmm. And we're even trying to lobby for a statewide ordinance. But until that goes through, we want city by city by city to adopt this pet store ordinance, because the pet stores eventually won't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
Right? They're not going to have anywhere. But I'm really happy to hear that Blaine, the city of Blaine, Minnesota, we're giving them a push. So the city council members already listened to the ordinance, and they are looking forward to hearing more about it. Mm-hmm. So what I'm asking people here, if you live in Blaine, please contact your city council member and tell them that you would like a humane pet store ordinance.
Even if you're in Chicago or Madison, let them know.
No.
No?
So what happens is they only want to hear from the residents of Blaine. But if you know someone who lives in Blaine, please encourage them and recruit your friends who live in Blaine to call their city council members and tell them that they would like Blaine to adopt a humane pet store ordinance. And in Minnesota right now, Cloquet, that was the most newest one. We have Eden Prairie, Roseville, Carver, and St. Paul. So we're getting there. So if you know any city council members who might be interested in this, please send them my way and I could help help you do this. And what I really wanted to talk about, you know, during the week I was talking about the Onaquai horses who live in Utah and the roundups, right? And I'm really upset about it. And I'm going to talk a bit more on Monday about that and give some updates. But I wanted to talk about 13, I'm not going to have time, but some fun wild horse facts.
Oh, cool. Yes. I was hoping to get an octopus fact thrown in there. Don't they have like four hearts or something?
Well, here's a few things that I didn't really know. Not every wild horse is actually wild. There is only one breed of horse, the Mongolian wild horse, that is considered to be the authentically wild horse. Every other herd or family unit is considered to be a feral horse. The difference in classification comes from their lineage and behavior. Feral horses are the descendants of domesticated horses that were able to adapt living in the wild.
They escaped.
Yeah, they did. You're absolutely right. So for truly wild horses, their genetics help distinguish their efforts to live without human interference. So I looked up, are the Onaquai horses really wild or if they are? And the only thing I could come up with is that they are wild because that's, you know, they are wild horses because I couldn't find anything else that say that they were feral, but they might use wild horses, that verbiage, just to describe horses that don't live around humans. I don't really know.
Rolling Stone song too, wasn't it? Wild horses.
Yeah, absolutely. So also wild horses, this scientifically are different. They have 66 chromosomes. Another way to distinguish a truly wild horse from those that are feral is to look at their genetics. Horses that are truly wild have 66 chromosomes, while horses that come from domesticated lineage will have 64. And this is pretty interesting. This applies only to horses, of course. There are other wild equines species that actually have 62 chromosomes. That includes the zebra. These wild equine species can be mated to a domesticated horse, but their offspring will usually be sterile. So a really true wild horse can mate with a domesticated horse, but the offspring will usually be sterile. But in a domesticated horse, their offspring is usually reproductively viable because the extra chromosome pairs. So I thought that was a really interesting fact. I'm not going to talk about that or that because I could...
Can I sing the theme song to Mr. Ed while you're doing this?
Wild horses prefer to live in permanent family groups. Wild horses tend to congregate together into family units before they congregate into their herds. This is another change in behavior when compared to the feral horses that tend to roam around the U.S. and Australia. For the wild horses, each family group is a single stallion and one to three mares, along with any offspring. For the feral horses, several stallions may be part of the structural herd. That fact alone makes me believe that the Onaquai horses are in fact wild horses because there's pictures of them and people posting pictures of them in their specific group. Family unit. So it's pretty interesting. Wild horses will always maintain visual contact with their family members. If they have formed into a community herd, each horse within that herd will also keep within sight. They also communicate through vocalizations, tactile signs, and visual signs that are picked up by all of the horses in the family or the herd. ear tilting, grooming, and kicking are all common forms of communication that lead to complex social existence. Domesticated and feral horses also communicate in a similar fashion, but often without the emphasis on family. They are also social horses, especially in the wild, and they may have preference with whom they associate with, right? So just like people, you like some people, you don't like other people. It's the same thing with horses. So when I give some updates on the Onaquai horses on Monday, they are in pens right now, and they are up for adoption. So I'll give you a website and all this stuff if you're interested in adopting. But they say that they want the horses to go in pairs. And they're trying to get the horses horses in pairs because they like to be with another horse. And you could email Jennifer Itzaki to save the horses, jennifer.r.saki, and spelled with P-S-A-K-I, at who.eop.gov. And you could email her and just tell her how upset you are that this roundup took place.
Hey, Peenigigi Wendy, thank you so much, really. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to give a shout out to State Senator Mary Kunish for being on. I would like to end with these thoughts. If you are listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. The ground on which we stand on is sacred ground and is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. Happy birthday, Ogama. Really, it's great to have known you for these couple years when you were younger, and now you're getting old. Happy birthday, Louis Peenigigi, for your TikToks. We're still here. We're the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.